Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Welcome to the Valentine's Day edition of Peach State Pandemonium. This is Michael Norris, and I, as always, I am with my two favorite Valentine's Day, the wild and wonderful Jerry Oates and the bold and the beautiful Bobby Simmons. How are you gentlemen doing this evening?
Well, you must be expecting a dozen roses for that.
No, but I hope you two took care of your better halves today.
Oh, yeah. I took her grocery shopping. She made me pay for it.
Did you stop and buy an iron on the way to?
I almost rather take a beating than go to the grocery store.
I tell you what, every week it's more and more and more.
Oh, yeah, and you get less and less and less. Oh, geez.
You know, the biggest sham going is they cut back on the size of everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's so subtle that most people don't pick up on it.
Yeah, a bag of sugar is no longer 5 pounds. It's now 4 pounds.
Is it really?
Yes, and ice cream, used to, you know, you could buy a half a gallon of ice cream. Well, it's not actually a half gallon anymore. It's a little less.
Have you seen the price of that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
What, $7 or? No.
I am, you know, I've never smoked in my life. I've never been a drinker. You know, my biggest habit is ice cream. I'm a junkie.
Well, I tell you what, you got an expensive habit, son.
Well, I buy the store brand, the off the wall, whatever it is. That's what I get. I can't afford that. You know, you get that name brand stuff. I can't afford it.
Please.
Well, like you're up there with Mayfield. Why don't you go to the source? How far is a Mayfield Dairy from you? Just go right to the source.
So yeah.
Pull up to the back door, knock on it, ask for some ice cream.
Yeah.
Might give you some with some freezer burn on it or something.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
Well, yeah, we finally had sunshine in Atlanta today. I got up, when I get in the shower in the morning, I have a radio in the bathroom, and I always turn it on to listen to the traffic and the weather and know what I'm facing. And there was wrecks all over I-75 North this morning out of Henry County. Only thing I can attribute it to is people didn't understand what that big red star in the sky was today. It's been so long since they saw it.
Well, speaking of all that, what's the gas up there? It's gone up down here. I don't know about where you are.
About $3.55 for regular up here.
Yeah,
it's up in the 340s here. 2 weeks ago it was $3.19, $3.16.
It's made that big a jump?
Yep, 30, 40 cents.
Yeah, yep. We were buying it a month ago. We were buying it for $3.17, $3.16 around here. Well, I heard on the radio, and of course you don't know, but they say that the refineries shut down for a week to do whatever maintenance they have to do to switch over to producing the summer blend, where I guess they put more additives in it or something because of the pollution. So they said because it shut down, it reduced the supply, and of course the demand was still up, and that's the reason it went up, which is, if y'all believe that, I got some mountaintop property in Daytona Beach I'd like to see.
Well,
y'all,
I tell you what, they can come up with some of the dead-gone uses.
You know, you guys remember this, and I'm sure some of the people listening do too, but you remember they tried it with everything. They tried it with coffee. They said coffee, we had a shortage of coffee. Remember how the price shot way up on coffee here 10, 15, 20 years ago? And everybody quit drinking it. And then amazingly, the price came back down. And then they tried it with sugar. And the price of sugar went sky high, and everybody quit using sugar, and the price came back down. But it's just a fact. Folks are not going to quit driving.
Well, you can't.
I mean, you know, if you're going to survive, you got to. And the reports at the end of the year said that the oil companies made the biggest profit they've ever made in their history.
Of course. But then because of the spill, they couldn't pay their income taxes.
Jeez.
That's what they used last year for because of the spill. They lost money because of the spill.
But I haven't tried that one. I wonder if that'll work for me.
I don't know.
I'm looking into a camel.
Yeah.
You don't drink much water.
But you don't want to get in front of one of them.
No.
In case he spits on you.
Oh, jeez.
I've experienced that thing, and that was before I joined the circus. That happened to me when I was a little kid. It wasn't a thrill. I just want you two to know, and our listeners to know, I am making the supreme sacrifice to be doing this show tonight. Tonight is the beginning of the new season of Swamp People. And
well, I'm sorry we've interrupted you.
Swamp People.
They've had a marathon running today, and I've been running some errands today. I been sitting here watching Swamp People. I got my Troy Landry T-shirt on, and I've been watching the Swamp People.
Jeez. You know, the thing up here everybody's talking about now is this Duck Dynasty.
Yes, Bo James' favorite show.
I mean, you know, this is...
Randy
telling me, you know, oh, you really got to watch Honey Boo Boo. It's funny. You'll love it, blah, blah, blah. Well, I made 10 minutes of Honey Boo Boo before I turned it off.
Well, I'm telling y'all, the mentality of people has gone down the drain.
Oh.
Well, it's always been that way. It's just that now television's discovered that these people make cheaper programming than hiring actors.
Well, those dark people, they're the nastiest looking, cheesiest looking. I can't watch it. I just can't lowrate myself into watching them.
Now, Jerry, all you got to do is just watch and pretend you're back in the wrestling business and looking at the front row.
Well, it reminds me of some of the dressing rooms. The guys in the dressing room.
I think that's the truth.
When the scuffling hillbillies were in town, right? Oh, man. Well, anyway, I do have a little bit of bad news, as it always comes down. We've gone a couple weeks, but... We did lose a member of our fraternity this week, and this gentleman, I think he came along after all of us. Jerry, you were around still beyond Bobby and I, so you may have crossed paths with him. A gentleman by the name of James Jefferson was his real name, but he worked on the name of Jim Jeffers and Spike of the Mod Squad. He and his twin brother were a tag team that worked out in Kansas City. They worked in Memphis. They worked in the Carolinas. They worked in Florida. They worked several territories in the mid to late 80s. So, but he passed away this week at the age of 52, fairly young. But he'd been sick quite a while, but I'm not sure what the details were. But we want to send our condolences to his friends and family.
Do you know where he was from?
That I don't know, Jerry. I don't know.
I might have crossed paths with him, Mike. I just, off the top of my head, I don't know.
So, yeah, he and I think the guy that worked with him was his brother. And I think they were twins as well. His brother worked on the name of Mac Jeffries. Bash, I think it's the name he used. What? But anyway, we're going to be joined tonight by special guest Scott Teal and also Smokey Galento. So I'm going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get Scott on the line, and then we'll call Smokey. So let's take a quick break and pay a few bills, and we'll be right back.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling, and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
What's the name of our phone group we kept getting when I tried to call Jody that time?
Magic Jack.
Magic Jack, okay. Magic Jack. Oh, man.
Just call Lonesome 77203.
Well, he asked me to call him at 7:10 his time, which is 8:10 your time.
Well, that's unusual. We didn't get his answering machine or his voicemail.
He may be on the phone. Yeah, it could be.
He's probably talking to somebody going, "Are you listening? They're not really getting me."
It's a rib.
Now, what do y'all think about them trying to take wrestling out of the Olympics?
They're not trying to take it out. They've taken it out.
They did.
Yeah, they did.
Yes, sir. It came down to between that and the pentathlon, and as it turns out, the guy who's the head of the International Olympic Committee is tied in and comes from the sport of pentathlon. So it's all work anyway. It's all as crooked as anything I've ever seen. There's more money spent in that Olympics on supposedly pro things, and now I hear they're going to replace it with golf. So they can send Tiger Woods.
I'm just happy they didn't mess with the synchronized swimming. That's
badminton, you know.
Jeez.
What an absolute mess. I don't know. Foot running or running and wrestling are two things that you don't mess with in the Olympics because of the history. And they go all the way back to the beginning of time.
They have stuff in there I've never heard of. I mean, I don't know.
They messed up the Winter Olympics. They've taken out so many things for the Winter Olympics so they can add so many of these X game type things.
And I think that's ridiculous.
You know, snowboarding off a cliff and...
really?
Stupid stuff. But, I mean, the two oldest things in the world are wrestling and running because even the cavemen, if they got in a fight, they had two choices, run or wrestle.
There you go. And leave ping pong in there.
No, it's table tennis.
Whatever.
Oh, man.
Well, if they're going to leave ping pong in, I think we should at least send Forrest Gump over there to compete for us.
We need to find us a Forrest Gump. Oh, man. I know a lot of people, they started a petition going around that a lot of people supposed to sign. What good that'll do. Somebody will have to come up with some cash before.
That's the whole thing. It's money.
Exactly. It all boils down to, I don't know.
We need to get Mr. Hodge on the phone and let him express his opinion.
Yeah. Or let him go over there and meet the Olympic Committee.
Check hands with that guy.
I'm sure that would clear the way quite easily.
Well, what was the reasoning for that? I mean, was there a reason?
Well, supposedly they've gotten too many sports and they're overwhelming these cities that they go into. A lot of the places they go, sports aren't native to that country or whatever, so they don't have facilities to house it. And there again, what do you need for wrestling? You need a floor and some mats.
Every country has wrestling. All the European countries and.
Yep.
Japan and Korea and I don't. But when you have animals involved in the Olympics, jumping and all that, whatever they do, I mean that's not,
that's not the athlete. That's the animal performing.
Thank you. I think that's a joke.
Yeah, all that equestrian stuff. And on that, but the equestrian, they have their own, league for stuff like that. I don't know.
I don't know.
That's why I don't understand, where there's a profession like tennis and stuff like that, why do they need to have that as an Olympic sport as well? I don't know. Is there a professional ping pong or professional badminton league? I don't know.
I don't know, but I think it's ridiculous. Like with the basketball, they take the pros. I think that's ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
that's my opinion.
That's weird. Yeah.
Jerry, when Michael was up here last time, we had the opportunity to go to a high school wrestling tournament. And a young man that goes to my church, this is his second year of wrestling. He had never wrestled before last year. Steven's about 5'4" and strong as an ox. But his weight bumps him up till he's wrestling guys that are a little bigger than he is. We had a chance to see him win. He won his first match when we were there. First one he'd ever won. He won when me and Michael was there. But while we were there, Michael, tell him about the guy we saw that was wrestling the heavyweight.
Well, this guy.
You
Jerry,
know the one I'm talking
like,
about?
Yeah, this guy looked like Luther Lindsay.
No, he did not.
No, he was bow legged. You could drop ride a midget on a tricycle.
He couldn't have trapped a hog in a ditch.
And he was had cauliflower ear. Now, how many high school kids you know have cauliflower ear?
Good
I swear, Lord. He looked just like Luther Lindsay. I told Bobby, I said, that's he's brought a ringer in here.
Yeah, this guy's 40 years old.
Was he any good?
He beat the guy he wrestled.
Yeah.
We didn't see him wrestle but one time, but the guy he wrestled was a lot taller than he was, but it didn't matter.
No.
Somebody told me, I don't know who it was, somebody up there where we were sitting said that the guy said he played middle linebacker on the football team. But he was...
Well, you know, the people have no idea how much dedication and work it takes in amateur wrestling. I mean, it's just for the hours upon hours those guys put in and then to do them like that, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, that's what I don't understand. And what it's going to do is, you know, all those guys that do that, they're now going to go to MMA instead, you know, because that's what they'll train for. They don't have the goal of going to the Olympics anymore.
Right.
So they'll go to MMA because there's certainly not room for them working for Vince. And, you know, what would he do with them anyway? You know, the few
that's
ones that he's got up there that are legitimate wrestlers, he's given a dumb gimmick and they punch and kick and clothesline and all that stuff, and they don't wrestle. So, who knows? Oh, well, I guess, does Ted Turner still have the World Games, or do they still have those?
No, they don't do that anymore. Now, Turner hadn't done that since he sold all his interest in the AOL and the broadcasting and all
that
stuff.
There's nothing like the Pan American Games and all that used to be back years ago?
I don't think so. I haven't heard about them if they are.
Wow. Well, that's a shame. Those guys certainly don't have anywhere to go. Well, let me try and get Scott again. Let's see what happens here. Maybe he'll answer the phone.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
It's at New York, and hang on.
Yeah,
a second. Let me turn off the. It's at New York. I tried calling back, and it kept getting a busy signal, so I should have called on your other number.
No problem. Not a problem at all. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. How are y'all doing?
Good.
We're good. We have to route our calls through different towers so we can't be traced.
Yeah.
I figured it was Mike. I figured he had another phone for his business or his company or his job or something.
No, I thought the call in number is the people call in is a Los Angeles number. Now the host call in number, which may be the one. Mine, when I call out, goes through. It's 213. Is that New York?
I think mine's 307, I think, is what you called in on.
I don't know where they came from.
347.
Yeah, that's Los Angeles. That's not New York.
He's using a payphone, Scott.
I hear you.
I'm on a payphone at the corner of Government and Ann Street in Mobile.
Oh boy!
But let me. You got anything before I get Smokey on the line?
Not me. She's ready for you to call.
All right. Well, I'll call her real quick, and we'll see.
Now you explained to her that the gun will not shoot through the phone, right? The bullets will not travel along the phone lines.
Hello.
May I speak Smokey, please?
This is she.
Hey,
got
Smokey.
Laryngitis.
Okay. How are you doing? This is Michael Norris from Peach State Pandemonium. I've also got Scott Teal, Bobby Sutton, and Jerry Oates on the line with us. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you very much. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Well, Mike, you didn't tell me happy Valentine's Day.
Well, you know, I don't want Bobby to start talking, you know, starting around the Mobile reunion.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about Jerry because he won't show up down here, so I have to worry about Bobby.
Okay.
Well, hopefully your voice will hold out, Liz, but if you start feeling letting go on you, just let us know, and we'll arrange to have you back on another time, but I certainly appreciate you doing the show with us.
You're welcome.
Let's begin at the beginning. How did you, I tell you what, before I do that, somebody on the, that's called in wants to speak to you. I know Gene Bennett from, used to work for Gulas up there. He was he knew Butch and knew you back in the day, and he said he had a question for you. So let me get him on the line with us real quick.
Uh oh.
Burrhead Bennett.
What do you want, boy?
I got Smokey on the line. You had a question you wanted to ask her.
Yeah, she knows me as Gene Lavelle. You remember me, Smokey?
It seems so. Yeah.
You remember? I mean, it's been bugging me for years. I can't remember. You remember the guy's name that died on in the, after he got out of the ring down in Phoenix City?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I know who you're talking. Yes, I remember, yes. Yeah, he fell dead in front of me. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name. Right now, no.
I can't remember it either. It's been bugging me to death. I was thinking it was a hit something, but I wasn't sure.
No, that's not right.
Yeah. Okay.
I knew him for a long time, but I can't remember. I really can't.
What year did that happen, Jerry? I mean, Gene, you said 19... I was asking Gene. You said that was in 1970, Gene?
Somewhere in the 70s or... I don't remember exactly what year it was.
Jerry, you were in Columbus. Do you remember that?
I remember when they were running over there.
Yeah, he was supposed to wrestle. He was under a hood, and
yeah,
he was wrestling.
I wrestled against him that night when he told me he said, I'm not feeling too good. Let's end it. So, time I got the dressing room, he done dead.
He was he was talking to me when he fell dead.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
I come in there and talk to him, and I turned around to leave going up in the dressing room with that National Guard armor, and he hit the floor.
He sure did. Sure did.
Well, how you been doing, gal?
Oh, doing okay, I guess. Getting old.
Well, all of us doing that.
Yeah. You been doing all right?
Fairly well. When you gonna come back to Mobile?
I live in Pensacola.
Yeah.
I come through Mobile a lot.
Well, I live close to Rome, Georgia, Daryl, Georgia.
Yeah.
I just wonder if you're going to come back to Mobile anytime for a reunion.
Oh, you're talking about for the reunion?
Yeah.
Isn't it in March this year?
Yes. Yeah.
First weekend of March?
First weekend of
March. I'm
going to
try. Yeah, I'm going to try.
Okay. Well, if you do, I get to see you and talk to you.
Yeah, good then.
We're going to get Jerry Oates to pick her.
Yeah. Jerry will swing by and pick her up in that airplane he's flying down in.
Uh-uh. You know better than that. I don't fly a plane.
Get off here and let's stay on her computer.
All right. Thanks, Jerry.
Have a good night.
You too.
Night.
Bye, Gene. See you in a couple weeks.
Let's get back to the beginning, Smokey. How did you meet, and for those that's listening to us, we have listeners out there, Smokey. If I say Butch, I mean Mario Glenda. Mario was the name he worked under, but most everybody knew him as Butch. His name was Butch Boyette.
I always called him Butch, yeah.
So most people that worked around him did, worked around him a long time. How did you, how did you come to know Butch?
Well, I was a wrestling fan, and I didn't like him too well, right? And
Smokey, what and was the first thing? Do you remember what the first thing you said to Butch was? You told me one time.
I'm not going to repeat that on the phone. I got my kids listening. No, I thank you. I'm not repeating that on the phone.
It wasn't real nice anyway.
No, he was rash. I had seen him, and I didn't like him. I told him so. And anyway, he was in the middle of the ring wrestling. He turned around, and I had yelled something at him, and he looked at me, and he said, "I'm going to marry you someday." And I told him no, he wasn't. And we were married about a year and a half later.
Well, you know, he knew hypnosis. He didn't hypnotize you into marrying him, did he?
No, not quite. No. No. I was walking down the thing, and he was signing autographs after he had said this. And Scott doesn't know about this because I didn't tell him. Anyway, and he was walking toward me. And this is after his match. And I was going to the restroom is where I was going. And he just grabbed me up, threw me in the air, and kissed me. And he said, "I tell you, I'm going to marry you someday." And so we did get married. Oh, well. He's a pretty strong-willed man. I have to say that for him. When he said something, he usually done it.
Tell a little bit about Mario's childhood.
His daddy was a sharecropper, and that's what his daddy did. Excuse me. And he was raised on a farm, and he always wanted to be a hobo. There was a train that went through the farm or about beside the farm somewhere there. And when he was 13, he hopped on the train and took off. And then when he was about 16, 17, something like that, he came back home and helped his daddy. And he started wrestling for Roy Welch. That's how he started. And right outside of Batesville, Mississippi. Sardis, I get it right. Sardis.
Is that where you
were from
originally?
Go
ahead, Scott.
Did he have his daughter Barbara before he started wrestling, or was that after?
Before.
Okay.
Yeah, but before. She's a month old. She would be a month older than me.
I was under the impression that he was much older when he started wrestling. I was thinking he was in his 30s.
He was about 17 or 18.
Okay.
When he wrestled for what's his name? Roy Welch.
Yeah, he first came into Mobile in 1953 for the first time, and he was here as Butch Boy yet. And then came back under a mask in 54 as the Mask Flash, and then when they unmasked him, that's the first I know of him using the name Mario Galinta.
He wrestled a lot with Al Galinto. Mm-hmm. And Al told him he didn't like his name, and we're not going into that because he never liked his name. And so Al talked him into wrestling as Mario Galinto. And he legally changed his name in 56, I think.
Okay.
Something like that. I can't remember back that far. I'm getting old, you know.
Well, let me ask you, in 1960, there was a third Galinto here in Mobile. Mario and Al were here, but they brought in a young guy by the name of Dino Galinto.
Yeah, and he kept telling everybody I was his mother, and I told him where to go to.
Do you remember who that was, Smokey? What his real name was?
I don't remember his real name. I remember that
Toe Mario's with him.
He was a little dope addict. Pardon me. And he ended up in jail in somewhere in the 60s.
He and Mario went to New York together as the Rebels, right? He was the same kid.
I don't think so. No.
Oh, okay. Because I've got pictures of Mario, the guy that looks similar, very similar to the one that was in here as Dino, and they were up in New York as the Rebels.
Yeah.
The Wild Rebels or something like that.
Yeah.
Did you go up to New York with him, Smokey, when he went up there as the Rebels?
I went up for a little bit and came back. I don't like New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went up. Yeah, I came home.
Yeah. Well, these guys have just, every time I talk with Mike, he brings up the subject, and we got to go through it. And I know you don't mind telling it, but they want to hear the story about Smokey Galento and the gun.
Which time?
Let's start with the first one, I guess, with the Vachons.
Yeah. Butcher Vachon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was, let's see. Oh, Lord, let me think. Clyde Steve. And,
yep,
yeah, I like Shot Clyde. I almost pulled trigger. And then there was, oh, God, there was so many.
Louis Tillett, wasn't there?
Yeah, Louis Tillett would always have me check before he'd go in the ring to wrestle, but, yeah. Make sure I didn't have pistol. Yeah. Bill Dromo, who is a close friend of ours, very close. I went up to the wrestling convention, which he was talking about a while ago, and I had remarried. Everybody knows I remarried after Butch died, and married to a wonderful man, very wonderful man, and I've lost him too. So anyway, I went up there, and Bill Dromo come throw his arms around me. And my husband had not heard a bunch of stories because I had really not, you know. He knew I was married to Butch, but he didn't know a lot of things anyway. And so anyway, Bill Dromo looks at me, and he says, "Are you packing?" And I said, "Shut up." And he said, "Are you packing?" I said, "Shut up." And Joe, who's my husband, he's looking at me real funny. And I said, "No, Bill, I'm not." And he said, "I don't believe you. Give me your purse." And he took my purse and went through my purse, and my husband's looking at me like, you know, and I didn't say anything. And he said, "I cannot believe that you're not packing." And my husband said, "What does packing mean?" Bill Dromo said, "Come over here with me and Louie and what was his name? Oh, God. Lynn Rossi was there and somebody else. I forget. And we'll tell you some stories about smoking." I said, "No, y'all don't." And they took him over there, and oh, Lord Jesus. We were in a mess. I was in a mess. He found out a lot. I didn't care about no one. But you saw my shot. Well, you know, I did almost shoot Jerry Lawler. Too bad I didn't do it, but, you know. I'm trying to think of his name. God, I can't forget his name. He was the sheriff there, and he worked for the sheriff's department and wrestled there in Memphis. And he was refereeing, and I can't think of his name. Good friend of mine.
You're not talking about Billy Wicks, are you?
That's who I'm talking about. Thank you very much. Billy Wicks, he grabbed me and he said, "Smokey, run and get rid of the gun." And his daughter was selling tickets, and I threw the gun in her lap and I slid under a car, and everybody went to jail except me. And I went down there to get Butch out, and we were in Batesville, Mississippi. Hello. And I went to get Butch out, and Lawler said, she like shot me. And I said, buddy, you better thank your God I didn't. And the man asked me, he said, have you got a gun? And I said, no. I said, search me. And he went through my purse and everything. And Billy Wicks's daughter had my gun. Yeah, I like shot him there, coming out of the ring. But boy, y'all seen that boy run. I tell you one thing, Lawler used to come run. He could do that. He could run.
Well, I think that one thing that's really interesting about all this stuff with the gun, and the people listening may not understand what we're talking about, is Mike, for a long time, of course you know this, the guys were so good at doing what they did that people believed every minute of it. And even though Smokey was married to Mario, and I don't know how long a period it was, but she believed everything that happened in the ring.
I
think that sparked her up. And when guys like Louis Tillette the first one I think was Butcher Vachon,
yeah,
started beating up Mario, she lost it. You know, she was upset because she thought they were beating her husband. And tell them about how you finally got smartened up, Smokey.
Well, that's the reason why. Well, it was Louis Tillette. It was his fault. It was in Columbus, Georgia. And Louis just would not wrestle. I had to leave the building. And I couldn't understand. And anyway, who was the promoter down there in Columbus?
Fred Ward.
Fred Ward told him. He said, you smarten her up or leave her at home. And, of course, he wasn't going to leave me at home. You know better than that. And we're going home, and in the car, and he pulls the car over, and he says, well, I need to tell you something. Well, he sat and explained it all to me. And when he did, I socked him right in the jaw. And I told him, I said, you have let me make a fool out of myself all this time. I said, I ain't even speaking to you. Yeah, and then of course he started training me, and to put me in the business, and I had my first match in Odessa, Texas.
Cool.
Against Little Eagle's wife, Venus LaRue.
She passed away this year.
Did she?
Last year, 2012. And you mentioned Bill Droma. We lost him right around New Year's.
Oh, no.
Between Christmas and New Year's, yeah. He passed
away.
Oh,
no. I hate that. God.
Yeah, that was, Bill fought a long time.
Bill was a wonderful human being. He was a sweet man. He really was. They were all good men. They all were, except a few. Like Jackie Fargo and Don Fargo and them, and of course, you know, who I dislike very much, so I don't go there.
Well, tell about your little bit about your training and how you got into wrestling.
Well, he just put me in the ring, and I was in the gym 7 days a week, 4 hours a day, and I worked out, and then he started training me. And what he did, he started, Al said, starting her out amateur wrestling first. And then, you know, so I learned how to take myself and fall and what all, you know, all that stuff. And then he started, you know, with me as going into the business. And so we wrestled as tag team partners or something. You know, and if they want to draw a big house, they would Butch would interfere or something. There's a real funny one. We were wrestling, I can't remember the towns. Gosh, I can't remember. There were so many. We was wrestling one night, and they had put Butch in a cage. And I was wrestling in the ring. And so when I walked past this man, he was, like, even with the cage, but, you know, Butch couldn't get out of the cage. And I don't know, Keen, what can you say on the radio? I don't know.
You can say whatever you want to.
Real
okay. All right. He said, there goes Mario's whore, like that. And I'm his wife, okay? And Butch heard it. And, of course, he went insane. And anyway, when I won the bout, and they were letting him out of the cage, and, of course, they had police around him and everything, and this lady handed him a banana and said, here, monkey man, or something to that effect, I don't recall. And the guy that had said that to me was standing there, and Butch got right in his face, and the guy, you know, got scared, and he opened his mouth, and Butch shoved that banana down his throat. So the guy says that he wanted to have Butch and me arrested, and the police said, for what? You're the one that called her that name. He was just protecting his wife. So, you know, several things. And then my daughter, Sissy, I was wrestling one night, and the two brothers, the Hines brothers, Billy Boy and Jimmy. You know, yeah, we lost Jimmy. Oh, God, they'd like to kill me. That was so unexpected. Anyway, Jimmy was standing beside the ring, and he was fixing to pull my hair or something. And my daughter had found a tube before. And she was 13 at the time. And she whammed him in front of the head with a tube before. My kids were tough.
Now, you were involved in several riots, too. Do you remember any of those?
Oh, I remember in Memphis. It was awful. They wrestled him and this black wrestler who was a good friend of mine. I can't remember. He died a long time ago. He died. He fell dead in the ring with a heart attack. Anyway, he was a very nice man. They were wrestling. They had brought in two Japanese wrestlers. And, you know, they're supposed to be real stamina and everything. And anyway, Butch got him in the ring, and they threw up on the mat. Now, this is the funny part. I'll tell you the funny part for her. They threw up on the mat, so, of course, Butch pinned him, and it was 2 out of 3. And so I went back to the dressing room. So the guy comes to clean up the mat, and he mops the mat with a dry mop. Hello? I'm not lying. And we've got, that auditorium was packed, and people stand up against the wall and everything. So what happened there is, of course, Butch did something he wasn't supposed to do anyway. And anyway, it roused the people. Well, I was separated from him. I was sitting ringside, but there was a lot of room. So the cops surrounded him, and then they grabbed me and threw me into Butch, and he said, walk to my back, and he said, don't move, just stay on my back. And he was hitting people left and right. And I'm thinking, oh, Lord, just give us the dressing room, please. So we got to the dressing room, and so the people are out in the parking lot. And anyway, they're all out in the parking lot there, so the police had to cover us and get us to a car to get us out of town because people were trying to kill us. And then I'll tell you real funny, this is hilarious. We were in Jacksonville, Florida, wrestling, and he had a bad cut in the front of his head anyway. And Jim Dykes, you remember him, he was the manager for the Infernos.
Yeah.
And he, there was all the, that, it was a big, huge auditorium, I remember. And anyway, Butch was on the good side that night, thank the Lord. But anyway, it was right, it ended up being right. This girl got up, Butch, Jimmy, of course, had through the fire and blood flew and all this stuff, and Butch was laying flat. Well, I had gotten up out of my seat. I was sitting way back, And this girl on the front row said, "Here, Smokey, take my seat." So I did. I took her seat. And the floors were real slick now. And I had on tennis shoes. And anyway, I wasn't doing anything. I just sat in her seat. And this smart cop came up, and he told me to move. I couldn't sit there. And I told him the hell I couldn't. And I said, "Who's going to move me?" And he said, "I am." And I said, "I don't think so." So he grabbed a hold of me to move me. Well, you know, police, they wear those slick shoes. Anyway, I'm trying to make excuses for the police. And all right. And so anyway, Butch was up there, and he seen it. And I mean, I floored that cop. Well, about that time, you know, police come from everywhere. It took five policemen to drag me out. And Eddie Graham was promoting. And so anyway, they put me in this little room back there. And Eddie had done come by and said, "Don't worry." He said, "I'm going to take care of everything. Don't worry, Smokey." I said, "I ain't worried." I said, "I got money. Get out of jail. I ain't worried." And so Butch come in there, and he said, "Are you all right?" My blouse was ripped. My skirt was ripped. One of my heels was broke on my shoe. Oh, and my hair was all down in my face. I had real long hair then. It's all down in my face. And Butch came in there and said, "Are you all right?" I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." Mm-hmm. And that cop came in there a few minutes later. He says, I'll beat your brains out." I said, "You couldn't do it out there. What makes you think you can do it in here?" And so he left. And, of course, we left. Well, I didn't go to jail. But the roughest time I think we had was Texas, because it was in Texas. It was in Amarillo, Mexico, when there was a big, they were supposed to tap the chairs down, and the promoter did not. And these, you think I was bad. These Mexicans bad. I ain't never seen knives like this in my life. And Jimmy Dykes was coming out with the Inferno, and Butch had asked me. He said, "I'm going to sit you up on this stage. Please behave tonight." He said, "Please behave." And I said, "Okay, I'll behave." He said, "Are you sure you're going to behave?" I said, "Yeah, I'm going to behave." So anyway, he had a rough match, and of course he beat the guy, and the knives come out. But they had a walkway that was above the people. You would have to understand, the walkway was level with the stage. The stage that I was sitting was a little bit higher than the walkway. Let me put it like that. But the walkway went from the ring over the people there. So they knew what JC and the Infernos were going to do. You're talking about right. And so anyway, all the wrestlers were behind the curtains. They had curtains hanging down. And the curtains, and so all the wrestlers were spaced behind the curtains, all the good and bad guys, to get them out. But they figured they had it across the walkway, they'd be all right. Well, I was standing on the stage, and JC lost it. In other words, you know, he lost control. And he, you know, he just went out of control. I mean, he wasn't trying to fight the people or nothing. I mean, he was losing control of himself. Which is something you don't do in the middle of a ride, hello, if you got any sense. So anyway, there's a guy standing in front of me, and he folded a chair. And JC was looking at the roof. And if he had a hit JC, he would have broke his neck. And he had that chair raised. Well, I looked all around to make sure I didn't see Butch, right? And all of a sudden, I just jumped and hit that guy between the shoulders, knocked him off that 6-foot stage and busted his ass, and the chair hit him in the head. And I jumped back real fast, dropped my hands to my side. So I go sit down, I go sit in the car because we're parked on the ground there. We were parked on the ground. And Frankie Kane, who's one of the Infernos, he and Butch came up to the car. And Frankie looks at me, and he says, "Boy, you sure can move fast." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, that guy that you knocked off the stage, and Butch was standing there, he said, I seen you jump between his shoulders. And JC said, tell you, thank you, because I didn't save his life that night, because it would have broke his neck if he'd hit him. Because this was a big, tall guy, a heavy set guy. But he busted his butt on the floor, huh?
Pat Patterson was there that night. Lord Patrick Patterson was there that night.
Yeah. You ever hear him sing?
What's
have you ever heard him sing?
Yeah,
Pat
I have. Yeah, he's been up in Las Vegas and with the Colorful Alley Club, he sung before.
He has a beautiful voice. A beautiful voice.
Yeah.
Yes, he does. Yeah, he was there, and that Mexican, what was his name? God, I can't even remember. Alex Perez.
Yep.
And I said, and I'm trying to think of who all was there. Golly, there's a bunch of us there. But,
something, Smokey, that I thought was interesting, and I don't know if Mike probably knows, I don't know if Bobby or Jerry have ever heard this, but the heat was so bad, the heels had so much heat and hatred from the fans in Albuquerque, which is where that actually took place. The promoter, Mike London, had a scaffolding set up that led from over the heads of the crowd, as Smokey just mentioned, went to the ring. And the reason for that scaffolding was because when they walked through the crowd down the aisles, people were, you know, they had knives and stuff like that they were getting these guys with every week. So they built this scaffolding where they went over the heads of the crowds to get to the ring.
Sure did. Because they cut you in a heartbeat, honey.
Absolutely.
Down there in Texas, I don't care where you wrestled, Amarillo, wherever, you know, it was bad. It was bad. It was riots every night. I mean, me and Butch right in the middle of them. I mean, I ain't never hit so many people in my life.
Wasn't Mario arrested one time for the police? David fooled the police, and he hit Billy Hines or something with a roll of pennies.
He got away. No, he got away. What happened was it was on TV in Columbus, Georgia, and he hit Billy. Oh God, Billy Hines was right. He hit Billy in the head, and the blood flew. And Billy was knocked out. Well, this chief of police there, he was a SOB. And anyway,
my grandfather.
They had a plane waiting at the airport. So we had to get him to the plane. And so we were driving 100 miles an hour down the road. Hello. And so anyway, we was driving down the road. Anyway, and the police was right on our tail. I mean, he wasn't far behind. And anyway, we got him on the plane, and the plane was taken off, and the policeman tried to stop the plane, and he couldn't do it, and Butch got away. But and then when he came back the next week to wrestle, yes, he did arrest him. But he had to turn him loose because Billy Hines, of course, didn't play the charges. But that police chief there, he was a doodah. He really was.
Yeah. Did you say, Jerry, he was your grandfather?
He's my grandfather, yes.
Uh-oh. Sorry. Oh, Jesus. I'm sorry.
Right.
But he still was a doodah. I'm not going to change it.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ever meet Mario Galento?
Me?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
I tell you one thing about Butch that a lot of people doesn't know. He was a very caring man, and he loved children. And in Memphis, there was a home of incurable kids and people. And he made time when we went to Memphis that he would go there and play with the kids and take them toys and do things like that for them. He was a very loving, good man, he was. But he was tough in the ring. He did have a smart mouth on him. Had a wife that had a very smart mouth. And at the end, everybody loved him. When I lost him, I heard from people I hadn't, God knows, hadn't heard from in years. They found my number and called. Yes. He was very well thought of.
Yeah.
But,
well, the story about the night you had a problem with the police, and I can't remember where it was, but Butch was wrestling Ronnie Hill.
Oh, Lord. That was Panama City. What about the police? There was two instances. There was one in Amarillo, and then there was one in Panama City. I didn't go to jail. He thought he was going to take me to jail, but he didn't. I mean, he was right before handcuffing me in Panama City.
Can you remember what happened? Tell the story. I remember Butch.
Lord, I can't remember what happened in Panama City. I remember what happened in Amarillo, Texas. I can't never forget.
Butch had Ronnie Hill tied up in the ropes, and you were out.
Oh, yeah, and I hit him. Oh, that was right from Mississippi. When I hit him with the chair.
Yeah.
Yes, Lord. That was, you know what? You would not believe that. That, you know, it was full of black people. I swear. There was very few white people there. Yeah, I remember stuff about that. Hold on a minute. Excuse me. Yeah, he had him tied up in the rope, and they were bringing me back west the next week. And, you know, that's how you made your money. And I hit Ronnie Hill in the head with a chair. And the chief of police came up behind me, but I didn't know who he was. And he was in a uniform. He didn't have no uniform on. And he put his hands on with me, and when he did, I knocked him flat over three rows of seats. And I forget who's referee, and said, "Spoke, you get to the dressing room now." And so I went in the dressing room, and he come in there, and he said, "I never will forget it." He said, "I'm taking you to jail." And I said, "And who the hell are you?" And he said, "Well, I'm the chief of police." I said, "Well, you know what? Before you put your hands on a woman, you ought to identify yourself, especially me." And he said, "Well, I'm taking you to jail." Well, all these black people that were in there, all of a sudden that dressing room was full. There was knives drawn, everything. And they said, I'm telling this one black dude, he walked out and he said, "You're not taking this smoking nowhere." And the chief of police backed down, and when me and Butch went and got in the car, and the black people, a bunch of them in cars, they followed us all the way out of town. And I told Butch, I said, "Well, he's going to arrest me next week when I come back in hell." And so Nick Gulas called down there and talked to him. I don't know what Nick told him, have no idea. And Nick Gulas talked to him, and when I walked in, the door, I thought, well, you know, I'm going to jail, I ain't going to wrestle my match, I ain't going to make no money. I'm going to jail, might as well go on. So I walked in there with my bag, and he was standing there at the door, and he looked at me, and he says, "I'm not taking you to jail." He said, "I'd love to, but I'm not." And I said, "Well, good for you, hot dog," and I walked off. That happened based on Mississippi when I hit Ronnie Hill. I forgot about that. And we were in Amarillo, and I was just come down the steps. I was on stage. I was come down the steps and go to the wing. And I forget what I was supposed to do. I don't remember. Anyway, there was a policeman standing there. And when I started down the steps, he grabbed me by the arm. And I told him, I said, "Would you please turn me loose?" I was being nice, which was a change. And I said, "Would you please turn me loose?" And he said, "You can't go down them steps." I said, "Hey, you watch me go down these steps." I said, "I'm going down the steps by myself, or you going with me. It don't matter to me. I'm going down the steps and going to the ring." And he looked at me, and he said, "Well, I'll just have to take you to jail." I said, "Well, you just get ready." And I jerked it loose from him and went to the ring, did what I had to do. They brought me out, and the promoter, whoever he was, I don't remember, who was pro? The Funk Boys were promoting. That's who had him in Texas. I'm sorry. How could I forget Dory and them? Dory told him, he said, "You're not taking her to jail." He said, "You're not taking her anywhere." And he said, if you say so, Mr. Funk." He said, "I say so." He said, "You're not taking her anywhere." So I walked out with Butch and we got in the car and left. But I hated Texas. God, I hated that place. I like to work to jail there more times than anywhere else. But I never did make it, though.
Why did you hate Texas? Did you hate Texas just because the heat was so bad? I'm not talking about weather, but the fans were just so bad.
It was so hard. It was so hard to because you're in there, you're wrestling in this ring, okay? You're not making $1 million like these boys that getting out here dancing in the middle of the ring today. Excuse me, I don't watch it today. I'm sorry, I don't. But anyway, you're in there, and you're to upset the fans. That's what you're to do. And you're to wrestle to the best of your ability, and you're training. But yet you're having to watch your back because there's fixing to be a knife thrown or your leg cut. Butch got his leg cut in Mobile, and he liked to bled to death.
Wow.
A guy cut his leg. The calf of his leg with a fishing. No, it was his arm. Excuse me, I'm wrong. It was his arm. He cut his arm with a, what you clean fish with, one of those knives.
Uh-huh.
Cut his arms, and we had our hands around his arms, and they wouldn't let us through. They wouldn't let the police car through to get him to the hospital. And I told him, I said, "You step on the gas, or I'll get up and drive this car. Somebody's going to move." And blood was just squirting everywhere. And when we got him to the hospital, he told me everything's turning gray. He had almost bled to death. Yes. And Texas, but Texas was the worst place in the world because it's mostly Mexican. And they don't have any sense no how. Sorry. I hope they ain't none listening, oh Lord. Texas was just bad. It was. It was just bad.
Well, that was the worst place. Did Mario ever express to you his favorite territory to work? Is that he worked in so many?
He liked working here in Pensacola, which a guy cut his leg here, and when we wrestled at Strong and Peace Street. He liked here in Atlanta, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I think mainly that because that's where he met me.
Bobby, do you remember Mario? Did you ever have any dealings with him?
Huh?
No, I never met him. I remember as a kid when he had his run in here in the 60s. Late 60s, early 70s, I remember, him being the top heel here. Going to the matches and seeing those things and the feud he had with Buddy Fuller and the things that they did here, but never met him. I guess there's two favorite stories I got, and they both involve Charlie Smith and Mario.
Lord.
Dromo said they were in Holly Springs, Georgia one night, and Mario and Bill were wrestling each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie was pushing Bill back, fussing at him about something, and Charlie's false teeth came out.
Yeah.
and Bill caught him, and he said him and Mario just fell out. He said they had to lock up and fall on the mat. They was laughing so hard.
Yeah, they were.
But Charlie Smith tells the story about they worked the angle where the referee was wrestling Mario, and of course the fans wanted him to kill Charlie, and Charlie had on long tights, and he said that... they locked up. Mario told him, said, "Take the gimmick out and hit me." And he said he had a pair of brass knucks in his trunks, and he pulled them out, and he hit Mario one time. Mario sold it, and Charlie put them back in his trunks. So they locked up again. Mario said, "Hit me again." And he said, "I can't." He said, "They went all the way down in my boots."
Yeah, I remember that.
Classic.
That's back when Charlie was skinny. His referee shirt only had one stripe.
Oh, do you remember the time? I don't know if you remember, and I can't remember who it was, I swear. It was a referee, and they had his clothes gimmicked, okay? Hello? Anyway, Butch was making an interview, and I don't know if any of y'all have ever heard his interviews. That man could talk the shoes off of a dead man, I think. Or whatever, I don't know, but he just had the gift. He had a gift, and it was one gift. It was his mouth, and that's where he made most of his money, like got us killed several times. But anyway, the referee walked up, and he said, well, you're not going to do so-and-so in my match. And Butch looked at him, and he said, the heck I ain't. That's when you couldn't cuss on TV, see? And he said, the heck I can't, and he grabbed him, you know, like at the collar. And when he did, he pulled the clothes, and the guy was standing there on TV in his undershorts.
Well, let's hope that wasn't Charlie. Kick the show off.
No, yeah. That wasn't Charlie. It wasn't Charlie. I can't remember who it was. But it wasn't Charlie, no. It wasn't Charlie Smith. Charlie Smith, he refereed most of the matches in Atlanta and around Atlanta. But here in Mobile is where Buddy Fuller and Butch wrestled in Ladd Stadium.
Yep.
And Butch was drunk. Okay, I'm going to tell the truth. He was drunk. And he had Carl and Barbara. That's his daughter by his first wife. Anyway, Barbara was half lit too, and I was on sobering in a bunch, and I wasn't fixing to drive the car. Hello, anyway. I told him, no, I ain't going to do this. So Butch gets on the hood of the car. Now, all these people want to kill him, and there's like 10,000 people there. That, you know what, whoever is on the phone knows Mobile. You have a tunnel. Cars were backed up at 3 o'clock trying to get to Ladd Stadium. In that tunnel. And anyway, Butch was drunk. Oh, Lord, he was drunk. And that's the picture that you sent me, Scott. He got 59 stitches in 58 minutes in his face.
Oh,
from Buddy Fuller, yes. But he was drunk. He felt none of it anyway. But anyway, he gets on the hood of the car, and Bob was driving through the people, driving him to the ring. I thought, oh, Lord, we're going to jail tonight. I know. And I'm standing back there dusting him. I said, you stupid. If you want to do that, go on. And, you know, they were both had, Butch was drunk. Barbara was half lit. She wasn't drunk, but she was about half of her. And I hadn't drank nothing. I was sober that night, so I had better sense. But anyway, she drove up to the ring, and he stepped in the ring. And, I mean, the bell didn't even ring, nothing. They started. And, I mean, the people, I'm telling you, you're talking about a riot. We had one. We, like, never got out of that town. Never. I was on the board. And we were down in Gulfport one night, and I had the kids. And our youngest was, like, 3 months old. And he was wrestling Bob Kelly. And he and Bob Kelly were tag teaming. That's what it was. They were tag teaming. They were on the good side. And they were fixing to change Butch over. And, of course, he was going to undermine Bob, knock Bob out, and let the bad guys win. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, anyway, he don't tell me right. Usually he tells me things when they're going to happen. I've got my kids in the car. I've got 5 kids in the car, hello. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden here come people, and they're rocking my car, and this guy jumps on my hood of my car, and I've got a gun laying in the floor, and Butch is getting in the car door, and I pulled the gun. I said, hey, get off the hood of my car. I'm going to blow you off the hood of my car. And Butch says, that's a policeman smoking. Put the gun down. And so I said, what the hell is going on? I said, what's going on here? And I'll tell you when we get out of town. I said, you better start talking. And you better start talking to me before we get out of town. I said, you know I got my 5 babies in this car? And he told me what he had done. And I said, oh, my, why did you not tell me? I said, I would have parked the car somewhere else. I had it right in front of the place. And he had, what he did is he turned on my car. And I got, but see, well, it wasn't funny then because I had my five babies in the car.
Yeah,
and
that's
they
scary.
Were trying to turn my car over. And he said, well,
yeah.
He said, we had been planning to do it, but we decided, you know, against it, for it, and this. And tonight, they said, let's do it. Les Welch said, let's do it. So they did it. And I swear, you could not pat the people in Gulfport the next week. He wrestled Bob Kelly. They wouldn't even let me in the building. I couldn't go in the building.
That's
funny. Quite a few things. Yeah. He was working a deal with Billy Hines, again, Billy Hines down here in 63, I think it was. And, you know, they did TV live on Saturday nights here.
Yeah.
But sometimes.
Where are you at?
I'm in Mobile.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right.
And, but sometime during the week, in fact, they. Mobile had wrestling Wednesday nights at that time, so Wednesday afternoon they had a live, you know, as most towns did back in the 60s and 70s, they had a live noonday show. The part of the show was had a cooking, you know, and the cooking, and my grandmother was it, Connie B. Hope was the cooking. I think Doc Moore did the noonday program, but anyway, they had Mario on there being interviewed, and he and Billy got into a fight there and tore up that kitchen. You can't get away with stuff like that.
We were in Texas to tell you something funny on Billy Hines. Billy Hines loved his vodka, okay? He stayed drunk. And so anyway, we were at, no, it was Knoxville, Tennessee. I get my towns mixed up, I have to straighten them out. It was Knoxville, Tennessee. And we done, me and Butch done been in a riot. Okay? And I'd been in a fight, he'd been in a fight, trying to get out of the ring, it was a mess. Anyway, Billy Hines was riding with us. Billy Hines would always have a fifth of vodka in his hand. And he'd drink it, and he'd take a bite of an onion. And so anyway, we wait till we think everybody's gone. And so we're going across the parking lot, and I hear something clicking. You know, I hear something like click, click, taps on shoes. And I said, Butch, I said, there's somebody behind us. He said, don't worry, I've got my gun. I said, well, I've got mine too, but it's in my purse. And he said, don't worry, I got my gun. It's in my belt. I said, okay. So Billy starts running. And so Butch don't never change his gait. He walks one gait, that was it. He never changed. I mean, he didn't run, he didn't nothing. He just walked that one gait. And I was walking, and so he turned around, and he threw the gun out, and it was a big black dude. And his shoes slid. You could see the fire shoot out from under the guy's heel. And Butch says, look, I ain't got time to blank with you. He said, Billy ain't had his onion yet. And I said, now you want a joke? Anyway, the black dude ran the other way. I said, Billy hadn't had his onion yet.
Jerry, do you have any of Jerry Oates, do you have any memories or stories of Butch?
I really wasn't around him that much, Scott. I met him in Atlanta early on,
yeah.
And I really wasn't around him that much, but I was impressed with him for what he had done, you know.
Yeah.
I know he always kept himself in shape. I worked with him in 1981, and I couldn't believe he was the same Mario Galento that was around in the 50s and 60s. He was just in tremendous shape.
Oh, he bleed in that gym, let me tell you. He put me in that gym. I was in the gym 7 days a week. I ain't lying. Even when I started wrestling, you know, and stuff, now he said, you still got to go to the gym. I said, oh, Lord. And, you know, I thought, oh, Lord. Here we go. They did open heart surgery on him. And when they did open heart surgery on him and they finally let him go home, they told him not to lift anything heavy, you know, for a while, because they stapled his chest together with staples. And I walked into the bedroom and he was curling his weights. Sure did. He never did stop. No, he never stopped. He believed that you stayed in shape. Now, he had been quit drinking a lot of years, but there in the 60s and the 50s, he was drunk all the time. I don't think he ever wrestled sober.
Probably did better. I know John Fargo used to say he always did better when he had something.
Huh?
John Fargo used to say that he used to have a lot of matches when he was strong.
Yeah. But no, when he did good in Tampa. When we were in Tampa, he had sobered up. And we could handle the rights. There was one match he had, and this is hilarious. We were in Tampa, and I was sitting somewhere, I don't know, and he was supposed to have gotten knocked out, and of course he was bleeding. I forget who he's wrestling. I can't remember them all. And this big fat nurse, I mean, she was humongous, hello? And she jumped through the ropes, and she's trying to shove a pin down his throat, saying, he's swallowing his tongue. And he's trying to get up, and he can't get up. And, you know, of course, the bad guys come and pulled her off, and the, you know, cops came up there and everything. And he told me, come out, he says, look, you know, she almost got that pin down my throat. Deal with him. I said, oh, Lord. Said he's swallowing his tongue. I know, I'll never forget that one.
You remember that story about Sonny Bird? Do you remember any of the details on that?
Oh, yeah. He shot Sonny Bird.
Yeah.
That was in Memphis. That was in Memphis. Sonny Bird was a gangster. And he and Butch had had a few words, you know, several times. And I don't know, they just didn't like each other, okay? But this one night, they decided they're going to drink together, hello? So they in Gillies, and they're drinking. And they got a big wash tub of beer sitting there, and they're drinking. And I don't know how they got into it or whatever. And Sonny Bird pulled his gun, and when he did, Bud shot him. Yeah, he shot him. But he didn't kill him.
Wow.
And so anyway, Butch got away. We got him away. You know, we got him away. And Sonny Bird wouldn't tell who shot him. And then years down the road, Sonny Bird, this has been years. Oh, God. He hadn't seen Sonny, I think, 20 years. And we walked into a bar. And Butch had quit drinking. I drank. And he was getting him a Coke, and I was getting him beer. And we turned around, and somebody said hello. And it was Sonny Bird. And I thought, oh, Lord, here we go. And he said, no, I've changed. And that we sat there and talked to him for a long time. But, yeah, he shot him. He sure did.
Good. Another story I remember you telling me was about Mario telling somebody famous the sleeper hold.
What about the sleeper hold?
A real famous singer. Remember Mario showed demonstrated the sleeper hold to a real famous singer?
Oh, yeah. That was Elvis. Wasn't it Elvis or was it Elvis or Johnny Cash?
It was Elvis.
Because yeah. Elvis was coming on stage after the Baptist. And Elvis had his bodyguards around him. And Elvis said to him, he said, "I don't believe in that sleeper hold." He said, "I don't believe put you sleep." And Butch said, "You don't." He said, "You want me to show you?" And Elvis said, "Yeah, you know, Elvis is smart ass." Anyway, he said, "Yeah, because I don't believe you can do it." Well, next thing Elvis did is his bodyguards picking him up off the floor. Boom, he went. And Butch looked at him and he said, "Well, do you believe in it now?" And Elvis said, "I sure do." And he walked off. Yeah, it was Elvis. I can remember what it was, him or Johnny Cash. I don't remember any one of the others. But it was Elvis, I remember now. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But he was a big fan, Elvis was. He used to go to sneak into Elvis Auditorium in Memphis.
Yeah. He had a lot of people that loved him to death. And he really was a good man, he was. He did so much. There was this family I remember, there was such a good side to him. And some people didn't see. Of course there was a bad side also, which I saw. Anyway, this family had the electricity off, and they didn't have any food, and they lived across from his mother, is what it was. And they didn't have any food for the kids or anything. And he asked me, I always controlled the money because he blew money. You know, he would blow money, and I said, "Oh, we ain't having that." And so I controlled the money, so he come to me. And he says, "Honey," he said, "do we have any money?" And I said, "Yeah, we got money. Why? What do you want?" And he told me. So we went and had their electricity turned on, and they didn't know about it. And we went to the grocery store and bought them a bunch of groceries. And Butch took them in the house. And because the kids was outside, and we knew the kids. In fact, Butch trained two of the kids, and they wrestled for a while. And the Grady Robinson and them. And anyway, he put the groceries in there. We put the groceries in there, me and him together. And we put the groceries in there, and electricity was on when the grandmother had went somewhere to try to get some help and couldn't get any. And because in Memphis you didn't get help unless you was one color. And he walked out and never said a word. And he told Mama, that's his mother. I called her Mama. He told Mama, he said, "Don't tell her that we did this." So Mama never told Miss Robinson that we did that. She went home and she had groceries and her electricity was on. He's done a lot of people like that. He did a lot of good.
I know he saved me in Dothan, Alabama, because I showed up to do TV for Ron Fuller, and they had brought Mario in the team with Bob Armstrong. And they had expected me to start working full-time for them that night in Dothan, but they wanted me working under a mask. And nobody had bothered to tell me, so I didn't have a mask or an outfit or anything other than what I had with me.
Yeah.
And Mario said, come go with me. And he walked in there and opened the trunk of that Cadillac, and he had 15, 20 outfits in there. He said, "Pick you out one."
Yeah. Yeah.
So he saved me.
Yeah.
Allowed me to be able to work for the next few weeks because I had that outfit. He was a great guy. My grandfather hated him, but Mario was doing his job.
Yeah, well, he probably hated me too.
Yeah, he was. My grandfather loved Lee Fields, and Lee and Mario. I will say it. I tell anybody that asks about this territory. This territory was built on Lee Fields and Mario Galanto.
It was. Lee and him had some good matches.
Oh yes.
They had some good matches. I love Lee Fields. You know, he was a sweetheart.
What do you know about Mario's Butch's hypnotism? Did you ever see him do that?
Yes, he could do that. He could not hypnotize me. He tried.
Uh-huh.
And he went to this hypnotist that he knew. And he said, why can't I hypnotize her? And he said, because she's your wife. And evidently she's hiding something, which I wasn't. But
yep.
He said, no, I was just kidding, Mario. He said, you love her and she loves you. And it makes it, you can't do that because there's a blockage there. But, yeah, I watched him hypnotize guy, and the guy made the guy quit drinking. I seen him make a guy quit smoking. He hypnotized. He had called, well, I don't know what town we were in. Don't ask me because I can't remember. But anyway, he called several people, and he had them hold hands, and he put them all to sleep at one time. Bam. And they went all to sleep one time. He could do it.
Uh-huh.
And he helped a lot of people with that, as far as smoking, drinking, or, you know, taking dope and stuff like that. He did do that. Yes, he did.
How did where did he learn that? Do you know?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I really don't. No, I don't. But I didn't believe he could do it, you know. We started going together. He told me he could do that. And I said, yeah, I'd fly an airplane too, believe that. And he said, you don't believe me, do you? And I said, no, I don't believe you. And so he tried me, and he couldn't put me under. And I told him, I said, see, you can't do it. So we went somewhere, and I don't know where it was. I don't remember. But he put several people to sleep, and I watched him do it, and I said, okay, you can hypnotize people, all right. I agreed with him. What else you going to do? But I don't know. It's a gift he had. And I don't know if he learned it from somebody or it was just a gift he had. I don't know.
Do you remember? Well, let me ask you this: would you like to tell the story about the incident with Jerry Jarrett, Lawler, and Tojo? I thought that was really pretty fascinating. I think Billy Wicks, Jackie Fargo were involved too.
I don't know which incident you're talking about because we had a bunch.
Well, that's the big one. Where they had the problems in the dressing room. I believe it was in Memphis TV.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was trying to stay home, and but this was right after, well, it wasn't too long after his open heart surgery. And I was working a job. And we had opened a wrestling school also, and I think this is the time you're talking about. And we were teaching people how to wrestle, not to work. There's a difference. And so, of course, Jack Fargo and Lawler got a hold of it, and they didn't like it. And anyway, they talked Butch into going in the ring on Jerry Jarrett, is what it was. And when he did, Jackie Fargo, Tojo, Lawler, son of a bitch, and, excuse me, Lawler and somebody else, they went in there and they beat him to the ground. They did. And the police, of course, interfered and got Butch out. And I was working my job that I had, and he drove to me, and I looked at him, and he was sitting in the car, and he didn't get out, and I thought, what the heck's wrong with him? So I went in there, and his hell on top of his head was busted open, and I mean blood was all over him, and I told my boss, I said, I'm gone. I grabbed my purse, and I took him to the hospital, and I forget how many stitches in his head. And he was kind of unconscious there for a while. And then when he came to, he told me what had happened. And that's when that is what, like, That's what caused me to almost kill Lawler in Batesville, Mississippi. And I told Jerry Jarrett, and I told the rest of them, I said, if I get to you, I'm going to shoot you. So help me, I'm going to shoot you. And I sent them word, and I told Fargo, I said, if I ever lay my eyes on you, I'm going to shoot you. And so I'm not going into about Lawler, stuff I know. Anyway, that's when they all went to jail in Batesville. And I was pressing charges. I said that Lawler hit me, which he did not. He wasn't fast enough. And he could run good, but he wasn't fast enough to hit me. And I had witnesses who were going to testify that he hit me. And I don't know whether y'all know or not, but there are some strong people behind wrestling. And I'm not going into that because I can't. But there are strong people that are behind wrestling that tell you to squat, you better squat, okay? And I got five babies, okay? And so we went to Batesville, and I was going to testify. And Lawler was going to jail. He was going to jail. And so they called Butch in there, and I was outside. And the lawyer was out there with me, and then the lawyer went in with Butch. And we got the message that if I loved my kids, I wouldn't testify. That's the message I got.
Wow.
And, huh?
I just said, wow, that's amazing.
And so Butch came out there, and he said, you can't testify. And I says, oh, yes, I am. And he said, Smokey, you can't. And I said, why can't I? He said, it's our kids. And I said, well, no, I can't. So I didn't testify, and they turned him loose. But I meant to put him in jail. But I did tell him when he came out, I said, you are away now. I said, I'll get you somewhere down the road. I said, bet me I don't.
Yeah, they pretty much set Butch up by sending him to the ring and to get him in there, and then they had an that gave them the excuse to go after him and shoot on him, even though, you know, he thought they were using him in an angle of some kind.
Yeah, they did it deliberate. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
They wanted us to close our school is what they wanted. And
yeah.
I told them, I said, I'd be damned, I won't close it now. I said, there ain't no way. I said, come through my door.
My goodness.
Yeah. But we didn't, no, we didn't close the school. They left us alone.
Yeah.
But
well,
Jackie, you remember, it was all over Memphis paper. I don't know if you remember or not. Jackie Fargo called, threatened me on phone. And it just so happened a friend of mine, Bernard, was there. And I had several phones in the house because I'd be different places and phone ring, I'd have to answer, you know. And so I motioned for Bernard to pick the phone up. And Bernard heard him on the phone threaten me and my kids. So Billy Wicks stood behind me, bless his heart. Yes, he did. So I went to Billy Wicks and I said, what can I do? He said, well, Smokey, you can swear out a warrant. I said, all right, I want to. So I swore out a warrant. So we went behind the judge. We went to the judge. And the judge wanted to see me and Butch and Billy Wicks. So we went into the judge's chambers. He said, are you pulling a stunt here? I said, no, sir, I'm not pulling a stunt here. I said, I want this man in jail. And so he said, are you sure? And I said, hey, look, I swear on the Bible, and I just put it right here, I'm not. This really happened. So I went out there, and his lawyer was questioning me, Fargo's lawyer. And he kept, you know how they pop questions at you? And I turned around, I looked at him, I said, if you'll shut up long enough and ask me one question at a time and give me time to answer it, I will. And the judge looked at him, and he said, yeah, one question at a time. So anyway, the judge told, and Billy Wicks testified, and, you know, and so anyway, the judge put Fargo. It was a big thing. It had a Memphis paper had a picture of Butch, and had Jackie in handcuffs taking him to jail, and they had a little picture of me down there, which I didn't care. And he told Fargo, he said, "You're not allowed within 1,000 feet of her. You don't go near her. You don't call her on the phone." He said, "If you see her walking down the street," he said, "you cross the street." He said, "Don't even pass her in the car." He said, "If you do, you're going to jail 10 years.
Good.
Yeah. It was a mess. I was in Memphis.
It was a soap opera back then, right at that time.
Well, it's not really. It's just that when you get angry and somebody is trying to undercut you or, you know, stab you in the back and stuff like that, you had to fight back. I mean, because that was your living.
Right. That's what I mean by soap opera. It was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes and a lot of backstabbing and talking.
Most of that stuff back in those days was more interesting than the angles they were shooting on television and in the arenas sometimes.
Yeah, it was.
Absolutely. Were you around the night Butch wrestled the bear and got his scalp cut open?
Oh, gosh, yes. That was awful. That was terrible. That bear was supposed to be declawed. They say, see, when they wrestled the bears, they were supposed to be declawed. Well, this man hadn't declawed the bear and hadn't told anybody. And that bear caught Butch, and I mean, the blood just flew. Oh, God, I don't know. He covered the mat. I mean, it just ripped his scalp open. It was awful. And they got the bear out of the ring, of course, and they had the ambulance pick Butch up out of the ring. They came in there with a stretcher and got him and sewed his whole head up.
Where was that, Smokey? Do you remember?
I don't.
There in Hattiesburg.
Yeah, but I don't remember when his scalp was. It wasn't Hattiesburg. Tuffy Truesdale had the bears that wrestled Hattiesburg and places like that. He kept his bears declawed and everything.
Yeah.
I can't remember where it happened, but I remember the night it happened, though. It was awful.
I don't think it was that close. I'm pretty sure it was either Georgia or Florida, because Steinborn is the one that originally told me that story. And
it could have been.
Steinborn never really wrestled on the Gulf Coast that much, in the earlier years. Steinborn, the way he told it is, the bear was pretty upset, and I think the blood probably added to the problem, because when bears smell blood, it's sort of, they go crazy. And he said after they got the bear out of the ring, the bear went totally nuts. He was jumping up and down, and he said it was like he was on a pile of fire ants or something. They were biting him. And every time he'd jump up in the air, he'd come back down to the mat. His paws and his claws would dig into the mat, and he tore the mat, the under padding, and even brought up splinters from the boards of the mat. I mean, just destroyed the ring. That's how bad the bear was.
Yeah, it was awful. They like never got that bear out of that ring.
Well, the reason
I was screaming bloody murder. I was screaming. There wasn't nothing I could do, and I was screaming bloody murder. And they came and picked him. Oh, God, it was awful. It was just awful.
Well, the reason I mentioned Hattiesburg was because I think it was in 1958, they had a bear in there, and they had it wrestling spectators. And one of the spectators got his finger bitten off. Somehow or another, he got his hand inside the muzzle, and the bear bit his finger off. So they nearly got kicked out of running in Hattiesburg and all of South Mississippi over that, but they stopped for 3 weeks, and then they came back.
Yeah.
So they got it all straightened out.
Yeah. It was awful. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Smokey.
No, I was just talking about the bear. It's all right. Go ahead.
Mike, we probably ought to maybe get some, have Smokey tell us a little bit about Butch's final days. I know we're probably getting close to the end of the program, and we'd like to find out what happened to Mario, and So I'll leave that up to you, unless you have some other questions.
No, that's fine. How long did he work, Smokey? When did he have his last match?
Oh, God. He died in 89.
Yeah.
84.
Okay.
He was sick then. This was a slow death. It was a bad death. I really don't want to relive it. But he always, he called me Smokey, but my nickname was Pretty Girl. And I had worked that night, and I went in, and I had someone sitting with him in the hospital. And I was taking her home, and I told the nurse, I said, he's not acting right tonight. Something's wrong. And she said, no, he's breathing. You know, she didn't tell me his kidneys were shutting down. She did not tell me at that time. And so I called him Papa. All the kids called him Papa. We called him Papa. And I reached over and I looked at him and I said, Papa, I've got to take her home and I'm going to take a bath because I've been, you know, handling fish all day, worked catfish cabin. And I said, and I'll be right back. And I said, I love you. And he said, I love you, pretty girl. And that's the last words he ever said. And I got home, and I was fixing to take a shower, and the phone rang, and the nurse said, you better get back now. So I just threw on something. I don't know what I threw on. And I hollered at his brother, and his brother was taking his time. I said, son, bitch, I'm going to leave you. Bye. And I was getting in the car, so he finally got in the car. And I got up there, and the doctors were all around him, and I just shoved the doctors aside, and I went to him. And he is breathing, you know, really shallow, and I heard the death rattle. I heard it, and so the doctor says, you have a choice here, and I said, what is it? He said, his kidneys are shutting down. He said, we can shock him, plus shoot him, you know, with that needle in the heart, whatever they put in the heart. Do you want us to do that? And I wish to God I had said no, but I didn't. I said, yes, do that. So they pushed me to the door, and I could see him through the doctors around the bed and the nurses. And they did. They shot him in the heart, and I watched him go to the fetal position. He was gone. He was gone. So I went to him, and they said, you're going to have to come out. Let's clean him up. I didn't know what they meant, and I went into hysterics, of course. And the doctor said, give her this, and whatever they popped me with, I don't know. I was out of scope. And my girlfriend was there. She had gotten there, and she was there, and they took me in this room, and they talked to me, and I said, let me see him, let me see him. And so they said, we will in just a minute. So in a little bit, they took me in there. They had cleaned him up, and they had the sheet folded. It was not over his face. It was folded. And I stood there for a while, and they said, what funeral home you want us to call? And my girlfriend did all talking. I couldn't talk because I just, you know. But I knew he was dying. I knew it's not like my husband I just lost. I was fixing to bring him home. My husband that I just lost, and everything went to hell in 5 minutes, and I lost him. But Butch, I knew for 6 years he was dying. He almost died on us 3 times, and then of course the last time, of course, yes, he left here.
He had several bypasses, didn't he?
They went in to do 3 and ended up doing 4.
Okay.
But you know what saved him? Let me tell you what saved him. Him working out. He had built small veins that was going to his heart that was feeding the heart blood, that from the blood, you know, the veins that were stopped. The one vein was 100 and two were 75. But these little veins was feeding his heart blood, and that's what kept him from dying when he had his open heart surgery. He lived, he had his open heart surgery in 1970,
I think it was.
Yeah, and he wrestled. He wrestled after that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, he was definitely a one-of-a-kind character. The wrestling business just don't know people like him. Sputnik and Dr. Jerry Graham, those one-of-a-kind characters that made us back in those days.
I wish I could remember that guy that he asked me who fell dead. I knew him so well, and I swear I can't think of his name now to save him a lot. Cannot. But I wish they could. If I do, I will call you and tell you and let you call him and tell him. If I think of it, I'll write it down. But right now, it's just left me. I can't think of his name. I don't know. But so anything else you need,
No, ma'am. I appreciate you joining us. I know it's been rough on you with your voice and everything. I certainly appreciate the time that you've given us, and because it's the next best thing to have Mario with us. And I tell you, I was a fan of his. I think all of us that grew up in the South saw him at one point or another, and just not enough people like him, or people just don't remember people like him anymore like they should. And for everything that he went through and all the territories he worked and everything, he was a unique character in our business. He probably would never have found somebody like Mario Valento in another business other than the professional wrestling business.
He was that. Yeah. Well, I appreciate y'all calling. A little hard to go back that many years.
Well, I understand.
You did real good. You really did.
You did real good.
Very good. Well, I'm glad.
We would love to have you come back to Mobile to the reunion. In fact, Bob Kelly has started a Hall of Fame out there at the building. And each year he's going to induct people in. And he started with basically the Welch family and Lee and Buddy Fuller this year. But I'm certain I'm on the board of directors. So next year when we decide, Mario Valento's name is going to go in there, whether I have to put it in there myself. Because, like I said, this territory was built on him and Lee Fields. I think Mario needs to be in there. And
a lot of blood.
Yes, ma'am.
He gave a lot of blood.
That's right.
But again, I appreciate you giving us your time. It's been an honor to have you on with us. And Bobby,
thank
Jerry,
you got
anything to ask Smokey before?
No, I just appreciate her being on.
No, I just appreciate her coming on and sharing this with us.
Well, I appreciate y'all asking and everything, and may God bless you all.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right. Don't forget my picture.
I won't. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Well, that was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. I appreciate you getting her on with us, Scott. I tell you, I've got a picture, and I'll send it to you, Scott, as soon as we get off the air, of two guys that I'm sure came out of Mario's school, and maybe the two kids that she was talking about that he had the electricity and food for, and that ended up in the business that he ended up training. I don't know if I ever even sent it to you. I didn't even think about it, but it's him with two young black guys that are obviously a tag team, and he's dressed in his managing gear, So I'm going to send that to you. Maybe you can get it to Smokey so you can tell me who it is, because I have no clue.
Well, let me put this out while we're talking about this. Smokey, quite a few years ago, back probably 97, 98, they had a house fire, lost everything. I mean, I'm talking about household possessions, everything. But they also lost every bit of her memorabilia. I have pulled everything I could find from my files and had nice glossy prints made and sent to her, and copies of things that I had that Mario was in. And I just did that a couple weeks ago, and she is so excited about getting some stuff again because she has literally nothing from her career or Mario's. If anybody listening to this has anything on Mario Galinto, photos, programs, if you wouldn't mind sending them to me, my address is, you can find me at crowbarpress.com or, my email address. I would, anything they could send me, I'd make copies and I'd send everything back, in good shape and as soon as I'm through making copies. But she would love to have anything anybody might have of Mario or her, or actually for Barbara Galinto too. So anybody that can help her out that way, that would just be wonderful.
Well, when you're down here for the reunion, we'll go through my stuff. I may have some stuff that you didn't have, and I'll get that to you as well, because I've got quite a bit on Mario, obviously, from his time in here. I've got some photos. I don't even remember where I've got them that were taken on his on the set of the movies that he filmed. One, he's in a cowboy, or a couple of them, he's in a cowboy outfit with a six-gun, and one, he's dressed like a pirate.
Yeah,
with a sword. You may have those. I don't know, but we'll go through what I've got too, and because I've got some stuff on Barbara as well. But
yeah, I sent her a picture of the one where he's standing on the street like a gunfighter, and I believe that was from the movie Frontier Woman, starring Lance Wolfe. And then I'm not sure about the pirate one. I've got one photo. Maybe you've got a different one. I'd like to see it. The other movie he was in was Natchez Trace, was actually
Natchez
shot
Trace,
back
in
1960. So I don't know if that's where the pirate one comes from or what, but it was a cool picture. I do remember that.
Yeah, that's everybody's got a holy grail of stuff that they would love to own. Having those two movies in any form, I would love to have, and I'd also love to find a copy of the book that he did called The Gentle Brute. It was... I don't know when that was written about him. It had to have been late 60s, early 70s. Do you know?
I don't know if I've got that or not. Now that you mention it, I remember seeing it. Maybe I don't know if I've seen the book or if I had it or if I just had an image of the cover, for use in one of my books.
Yeah.
I'll check and see what I can find. I'll check with a couple other people on the films. I don't know if those two are available or not, but we can sure, check.
Well, I've been looking for years everywhere that I can look. Usually, places like Turner Classic Movies lists both movies, but doesn't have them show them as available, ever having been available for home video. So.
Yeah. You don't think Chuck Thornton would have it?
I don't know. I've never checked with Chuck. But if anybody would have it, that'd be him.
Yeah, absolutely.
He would do it. Well, Scott, I appreciate you joining us as well.
Thanks, Mike. Thank my wife for letting me, setting me free to do this on Thanksgiving evening. I mean, on Thanksgiving, on Valentine's Day night, so...
All right. Well, we'll see you in a couple of weeks down here in Mobile.
Right.
And next week, we're going to have Les Thatcher on with us. Maybe a short show because, he's so quiet and demure. He doesn't like to talk.
Yeah, he's so boring.
Hopefully, a lot of people call in so there isn't a lot of dead air.
Yeah. Oh, man. I appreciate you. All right,
thank you,
Scott.
Mike.
Thanks a lot.
Bobby,
thank you.
I'll see you in a couple of weeks. And, Terry, if you want me to come to the airport in Mobile, I'll pick you up when you fly that plane in. And let me know, and I'll be there.
What's wrong with that, sir? I appreciate it.
Thank you all for having
Scott.
Me on, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Good night, Scott.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Well, that was a very interesting show.
It was different.
Nice lady.
Yes.
I hate that she hasn't been to Mobile. I met her and her husband probably the first reunion I came to, because they came for several years, and then when he passed away, they haven't been. But hopefully we'll get her back coming to the reunion. One day we'll get Jerry Oaks down there and Ted Oaks.
Right. You never know. I'll make sure it this year.
Well, I hope so. It'll be great.
I hope so. I actually have a picture of Ted.
The glider.
I have a picture hanging on the wall back here of all the guys that worked in Georgia that were at the reunion that year. And Ted's actually in the picture.
Really?
I don't know where you were. This might have been the year. Didn't Ted come one other time with Dick?
Yeah.
This might have been the year he came with Dick. Yeah.
But the glider, I got it. He said if we got it up to 186,000 feet, we could glide the most.
Gee.
He's got it figured out. So.
Hey, well, maybe if nothing else, you can get in the Gulf and swim out to that cruise ship they're towing in the Mobile.
Yeah.
or catch that great white by the fin that's down there off the island and just ride.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I'm like you, Bobby. I ain't going in that water.
Well, guys, it's been great as always. I appreciate you guys, and we'll get together next week with Les Thatcher, and we'll have fun again, as always. And thank
Sounds
you guys,
good,
for,
guys.
For, as always.
Sounds good. Have fun, guys.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Listening to The Tribecast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.